That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Good luck, Adam.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yes.
Hi.
Bye.
Here I come. Stand back. Good luck, Adam. Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, Mush! Does Paula have what it takes to guide a team of sled dogs across the frozen tundra to the North Pole? Probably not. It's been almost a year since theater shut down. It may be time to take up a new occupation. Like polar explorer Anne Bancroft, one of the world's preeminent polar explorers, who dog sled 1,000 miles and 56 days to become the first woman in history to cross the ice to the North Pole. She's here to tell Paula how to hitch up her huskies and head north. Pull on your mucklucks, Paula. You're gonna need them. Plus, the Department of Corrections. You've pointed out errors in our podcast. We're here to set the record straight. Is white noise syndrome really a virus? Or is it a bad habit? Keep listening to find out. I'm Adam Felber, the man who every week tries to drive our conversational sled due north to the gleaming pole of coherency. And now, please welcome the woman who follows the Aurora Borealis to the shimmering land of topical illusion... Paula Poundstone!
Yay! Well, thank you very much. So nice to be with you guys. And before we begin, I would like to thank our house band, Ansel Norris, trumpeter and multi-instrumentalist.
Ooh,
fantastico.
It sounded good.
Yay.
Yeah.
Whew. I love the trumpet.
Me too.
Goes without saying, given my own personal musical background. Adam, so I'm flying to Massachusetts. Did I tell you that?
No, you told me you were flying out of town, so you're leaving here.
Yeah, not right now. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not flying now, but I'm gonna fly to Massachusetts. A friend told me that you have to have a COVID test to fly. So I looked it up on the airline website, and I was kind of nervous, so I might not have focused properly. I thought it said that you had to have a COVID test no earlier than 3 days before you fly. I got an appointment with the urgent care near me. They said in order for insurance to pay for it, you had to see a doctor. So I get there, and a nurse comes in. He says, "Do you want both tests?" And I said, "I'm flying in a couple of days. I just want whatever I need to fly." He says, and he was talking from behind a mask, but also very, very fast. He says, "Do you want both?" I said, "Do I need both?" I said, "When do the test results come back?" And he goes, "Well, the Acme 350 Turbo comes back in 30 minutes, and the RD 259-438, which is what the airlines usually like, comes back in 3 to 5 days. I said, 3 to 5 days doesn't do me any good because the airlines say that you can't do it more than 3 days out from when you travel. So he said, "Maybe they can speed the results. Do you want both?" I said, I guess so. And he leaves. And in a few minutes, the doctor comes in. the very fast. Now, what makes him more highly trained than the nurse is that he talks faster. He says, okay. Hi, Paula, what are your symptoms? I said, I don't have any symptoms. I'm just here for a COVID test. He said, okay. Has he done the nasal probe yet? I said, no. He said, well, he will. And then he left the room. That was it. That was my doctor's visit. The nurse comes back in. He does the tests. I go to the front desk. I say, I see a sign, because there was a sign there. I see a sign that says the airlines don't like the 30-minute test, might not accept the 30-minute test. So I say, how quickly can I get the other test results back? And the girl says, 3 to 5 days. And I said, well, the airlines wouldn't accept it before 3 days. I understand how that works. And she goes, well, it doesn't. That was her answer. She said, it doesn't work. And she said, that's why when you made the appointment, we told you that so you could go somewhere else. And I go, wait a minute. So there are places that can get the 3 to 5 day results faster? She said, yeah. I go, well, no one told me that. No one told me that. So I'll tell you what I did, because I'm flying tomorrow. So I bought a home pregnancy test, and I'm going to use that.
Well, that's completely reasonable. But, you know, Paula, it's understandable why there's all these difficulties, because you're obviously the first person who's had to fly since the pandemic hit. So these procedures aren't very clear yet.
Well, you know what? When I looked at the site again, I think it's actually if you were coming in from out of the country, I have to confess that I think I got confused about that part. But I'll tell you something. I thought I liked this urgent care, but then I thought about it. I thought, well, this is the place where the doctor told me that time that my x-ray showed that I didn't have a broken rib.
Yes, I remember this.
And I remember she said to me, what I said to the doctor at the time was, I think I broke a rib from coughing. And she goes, oh, you couldn't break a rib from coughing. Then they do a x-ray and she comes back. She goes, nope, you're fine. And then she calls me the next day to say that I did have a broken rib and that it was loose. And she goes, the good news is it's not headed towards your lungs. Do you remember that?
I remember this whole incident. Yeah, this was around the time that we were starting up this mighty podcast of ours.
Yeah, it was just before my lung was punctured. It's also the place with the doctor who said I didn't have a bladder infection. And then she came in and talked to me about what else it might be. And then just before I left, she goes, you know what? It is a bladder infection. And then they gave me some pills. And the next day they called and said they gave me the wrong pills. So... what I like about this urgent care is that it's near my house.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. The idea that I would have to travel a long ways to get this kind of medical assistance would be so frustrating.
Yeah.
So it really, works out
good for me. You could go somewhere else and get better medical assistance, though, right?
Oh. And have no little stories? What, are you crazy?
All right. Well,
so
you know what?
That was my...
That was absolutely worth it, Paula. And I wish you well on your journey. I'm sorry you're heading to Massachusetts by plane and not cruise ship, because as Tony Anita Hull can tell you, that's really the only way to travel.
Yeah. And on the cruise ship, you don't need any kind of testing at all. For the cruise ships right now, all they do is a psychological test.
Right.
And
it's a pretty easy test, because if you would like to go on a cruise right now, you definitely are in no condition to go. Mentally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How bad do you want this? And the people go, oh, right now.
So, all right, well, you know what? Speaking of cruises, we have to move on to our own seafaring adventure, which is our Moby Dick book club.
Oh, yes.
Paula, we have a very full agenda tonight. President Ken Lezebnik is in Brooklyn, and he has, I'm very proud to announce this, he has designated me President Pro Tempore.
Pro tempora?
Tempore. Like President Pro Tem.
You're President Je T'aime. You're President Pro Tempora? I like that.
Yeah, it's President Pro Tem, but he has, I'll accept your answer too. He has sent me this gavel.
He's fried.
The book club's gavel, so I'm calling the meeting to order.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah. Order. The first item on our agenda is our book club theme song. Okay. Even though Bonnie put forward a song, we now have another contender. Nobody, Tim Crump, one of our house bands, sent in a theme song for us to consider. Land Romo, will you roll the tape for us?
2020 was awful, it made Tony blue. So let's start an adventure to make this year new. 'Cause Captain Crinkle keeps looking at all of the butts. We must do something so Adam won't go nuts. Paula, what should we do? Let's start a book club. What should we do? We'll start a book club. For me and you, we'll start a book club. What book should it be? With so many choices, there's a Gallimaufry free. We'll start a book club. What should we do? We'll start a book club. For me and you, we'll start a book club. What book will it be? With so many choices, there's a Gallimaufry free.
Wow.
Wow.
Thank you, Tim. You really captured the personality, I think, of the book club. Thank you. In a way that Bonnie's song, lose a leg, I'm not sure really did.
Yeah, as we pointed out last week, Bonnie's song was more of a reading Moby Dick at the theme club theme song, at the book club theme song, whereas Tim specifically gave us a theme song so that when we're done with Moby Dick sometime in the year 2025 and we pick another book, Tim's theme song will still be relevant.
Yeah. Bonnie didn't seem to have any idea that you read more than one book in a book club, unless, of course, you crack over the first book and have to quit. Is it?
All right. Well, order, Paula. Order.
Sorry.
Order. We have several more items to get through here. Second on our agenda, a report from our treasurer, Paula Poundstone, on her efforts to get Pod Save America's Jon Favreau to join our club.
Well, no, that's our membership outreach, Mr. President. Right now, I'm just giving my treasury report. I will follow with, and also, you know, I'd like to put it in the record. This week, we lost money on our bake sale, and we had a lot of leg-shaped cookies left over. Honestly, no one even stopped by the table that was at the entrance to the 405 freeway from Wilshire during my shift, and Tony didn't show up for her shift. She said she was reading, so I just packed up and left. And while I was packing up the wax paper bags that I put the cookies into, blew onto Wilshire Boulevard, one or two blocked a guy's windshield and caused a wreck, and I'm waiting for those figures.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, thank you, Treasurer. Paula Poundstone, order. Now, Paula, it sounds like our fundraising efforts each week cost us a little more money to run this book club.
Yeah, we really are. We so far, we are in the red. I have to get the rest of the figures from the police to know how far in the red we are right now. But fortunately, on the upside, I am continuing our membership outreach.
Okay.
Are you ready for that report?
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. Order. The chair is ready to hear your report, Paula.
Thank you, Mr. President. On membership outreach, I've tweeted multiple times to Jon Favreau from Pod Save America, who specifically said on their New Year's episode that he wanted to read more. And I have not yet heard back. That could be my fault. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that he had the morning shift at the bake sale table. That could have been not, you know, maybe not the right approach.
Yeah.
But still
him,
waiting to hear.
Okay. Yeah.
So
assigning
if we
him
have
a job
any
before he is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, he does have a job, but, you know, we all have jobs, Adam. The book club is something that we just do for pleasure.
Yes. But once again, if I was being asked to join a club and one of the first things I was asked is, will I help run a bake sale on the exit ramp of a freeway? I probably wouldn't join that club.
Yeah, well, you're a lot like Jon Favreau.
Yes, I guess I am. All right, order, Paula. Order. I want to reach out now to our publicity. What is her title? Bonnie Burns' title, our PR manager?
What am I?
Well, isn't that a good question?
Wow, we gave you a title. Bonnie.
You were the fundraiser. You gave me fundraising.
Yes, that's right. I believe what's called the Capital Campaign. Yeah,
right. Adam, you're running the Capital Campaign. So, order, for God's sakes, everyone. Order. let's reach out to Bonnie Burns. And Bonnie, how are our fundraising ideas coming along?
Oh, okay. Well, I said in our last meeting, our last show, that I would have an idea for the fundraiser. And
Point of order. We have to establish that. Will our secretary, Tony Nidahull, read back the minutes to see if Bonnie did indeed say that?
She
might have been
say
too
it.
Busy Googling.
She did say it. Okay, confirmed. Order.
Confirmed.
Damn it.
I can tell she had an idea because the lights in my house dimmed a little bit a couple days ago.
All right, Bonnie, what's your idea?
Okay, so these were my ideas, but I'm, you know, throwing it out to the floor for discussion. The one thing, I'll just do a little Captain Crinkle thing here. Which is, it dovetails into this. You know, I was reading something about how to make your book club more fun. And one of the suggestions, by the way, was to keep the book under 300 pages. So we kind of lost a little there.
Well, there's no way in this world that Tony's going to read more than 300 pages. So I think we're good there.
Okay. Another one was to come up with a book club name. So just put a pin in that for a second while I tell you the idea I had. So I was thinking about T-shirts. I thought nobody's might like, you know, to buy a T-shirt, get a T-shirt, and we could put it on the paulapoundstone.com website. But I don't really know. I thought we could brainstorm, like, what should be the T-shirt, what should be on the T-shirt. So idea... This wasn't a T-shirt idea, but I was going through Facebook, and somebody, actually, it might have been Tim Crump, who put an idea out that we should make a T-shirt that had on the front, Adam's on every show with a headset on, and on the back, God damn it, Bonnie. I'm not saying that should be the T-shirt that we do for the book club, but I'm just putting that out there.
Mr. President, if I could have some of Bonnie's minutes.
So noted, yes.
That T-shirt is on a whole nother topic, and that's not the topic we're discussing at this time. That would be a podcast T-shirt. We are talking about the book club within the podcast T-shirt, which is going to be in a whole different...
Absolutely. Order. So what you're saying is Bonnie has introduced an idea and then gone off topic while introducing it.
It would appear that way. I hate to say it.
I hate to say it, too, but Secretary Tony Nidahull, can you strike the last few sentences of Bonnie's from the record?
Didn't we have T-shirts for the podcast, didn't we?
No, we did. But this
are we
is,
still selling those or not?
And how much did we make on those, Bonnie?
It Captain doesn't Crinkle, matter huh? because... Now we're in a position with our new podcast that we could come up with our own T-shirts and sell our own T-shirts. You're off topic. Mr. Pro Tem, whatever you're called, she's off topic.
Okay, I have some ideas, pro tempore. I have some ideas for...
You can just call me President.
Mr. President, I have some ideas for what we could put on the book club T-shirts.
All right.
Okay. Here's one line of text. If you don't want to see Jon Favreau, this is the club for you.
I like it.
Yeah.
I have one. You don't know Dick until you've heard Paula's Dick.
Yuck. Ooh. Again.
Yeah. I hate that.
It's very Moby Dick specific.
We're going to be on Moby Dick forever.
No, we're almost finished with Moby Dick. We're easily 1/30th through. Here's one. The book club where you don't have to lie about what you read. That's good.
Oh, that's good. Because that's very good.
Because
like
Tony
it.
Just comes out. Tony not only says she didn't read, she bloody dares us to make her read. Uh-huh. She says stuff like, "I'm not doing this.
That's absolutely true.
Here's another one. Join the book club, no cover. Here's a good one.
Nice.
Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. Book club, what's stuck in your ear?
Oh, that's nice.
That's good.
It's a nice, clever reference to Bonnie Burns getting a silicone ear pod stuck in her ear, right?
Yeah. Just, for people that... here's another one. Be the high school student you always meant to be. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. And another one is slow readers welcome.
Nice. These are all great. How about the first rule of book club is nobody talks about book club.
No. All right. Well, that's
How do we decide?
Wait. Tony Anita Hall. What's your suggestion?
Mine was gonna be fuck you, Jon Favreau. Parentheses. Pod Save America, Jon Favreau, not Marvel's Jon Favreau. Just
wow.
to be clear.
So that, all right,
very,
so
it's very rare to find a t-shirt with footnotes, but Tony Anita Hall, by golly, you've created one.
Yeah, that's more of a hostile. That's why Tony is not on the membership outreach team.
Yeah. She's got a lot of rage, an underrated amount of rage.
I'm not sure that's the right way to get him to join us.
I would say it's probably counterproductive. We have a suggestion from erstwhile President Ken Lezebnik. He proposes a t-shirt design which features his image and the message, President for Life.
Oh. That's a good one. By the way, Ken is Ken right now. He keeps saying he's in Brooklyn. He's not in Brooklyn. He's been spotted at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Our former president's home is being visited by our book club president right now. That's interesting. Hey,
That may be where he came up with that idea of president for life.
Here's a suggestion, if I may. Why don't we have our listeners suggest book club t-shirt ideas?
Sure.
I really liked your first one that you said. I think it was the very first one. I thought it was funny, and I would like to get the t-shirts up and going because we need money to fund the book club.
This is
well, that is we, true. What was your first suggestion driving, again, Paula?
I think the first one.
The first one was, if you don't want to see Jon Favreau, this is the club for you.
No, that wasn't it.
Okay. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
What was the next one?
I don't know. The next one was the club where you don't have to lie about what you read.
No, that wasn't it either.
Okay.
That wasn't so good.
Oh, my God. She doesn't listen.
I do.
No, you don't. That's
yes,
that's
I
what
do.
We're going to go with. We're going to go with what's stuck in your ear.
Join the book club, no cover.
No. Okay, let's do this.
Okay, then it couldn't have been the first one.
Well, I guess I was wrong about it being
the first
one.
That's the first four.
It was all the right one I laughed really hard at. Why don't we decide
order
over this
order
week? And we'll
Bonnie,
announce
Bonnie,
it on next week's
Bonnie,
show.
Order. Order. We're going to decide at another date and announce it on next week's show if we have an answer. But for now, I'm going to close the business of discussing the t-shirt. Let's open for our last item of business. Moby Dick, chapters 23 to 28. It is the sense
of
the chair, the president pro tem, that we do not have the time to... let me say that again without Bonnie interrupting. It is the sense of the chair that we do not have the time to discuss those chapters this week in book club. So chapters 23 through 28 will be discussed next week.
Best day of book club ever.
Is this when we break for the snacks? Don't they always have that on book club and we rotate who provides them?
Who brought the snacks this week?
I have some day-old leg-shaped cookies.
All right. I hereby call this meeting of book club to a close. Thank you, everybody, for attending, and hopefully we'll get to Moby Dick next week. Okay, Paula, let's move on to
President
vocabulary
Kempora.
Words. Thank you. It's not tempura. It's pro tem or tempor. It's not tempura. Tempura is Japanese fried food.
I know what it is.
It's Adam is President Je t'aime.
Oh, thank you, Paula. That's very sweet.
Je t'aime.
Paula, do you have a word this week?
I do, Adam. It's lubber.
Lubber.
It's a noun that means heavy, clumsy, stupid person. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Hagrid's half-brother, Grop, was a heroic lubber. You know, Adam, I thought Ms. Nancy did such a good job with the vocabulary song last week that I've asked her back to do it again. Do we have Ms. Nancy on the line?
Hello, Ms. Nancy, are you on the line?
Hi, Paula and Adam Felba. It's me, Fairbanks Elementary School second grade teacher, Miss Nancy, and I am ready to perform this week's vocabulary song.
Well, Miss Nancy, it's really great to have you back. How's the distance learning teaching going?
Oh, my God, Adam. It's so hard. It's not healthy for kids to sit in front of a computer for so many hours.
Right.
They even have their PE on Zoom. Coach Stitches has the kids doing yoga. I tell her, I say they need to be up and running around yoga. Yoga's not good for kids. Russell got his knee stuck over his head. Now his mother and father are suing the district, but only after they got a shitload of viewers on TikTok.
That sounds awful.
It's terrible. I can't even eat a pretzel without thinking about that kid.
Miss Nancy, do you want me to sing the vocabulary song?
Oh, I almost forgot. No, Paula, I'm here for you. Here we go. This week's word is lubber. It's a noun that means a heavy, clumsy, stupid person. Once you've called a friend that, your relationship may worsen. Last week's word was ubiquitous. It's an adjective that means present, appearing or found everywhere. So many men are growing facial hair. The week before that, the word was obstreperous. It's an adjective that means noisy and difficult to control. Mo won't stop barking at people when they stroll. Going back before that, the word was evanescent. It's an adjective that means, I had it a minute ago. I can almost see it. Smells like Evan. No, that's not it. Oh, quickly fading from sight, memory, or existence, like Ted Cruz reflecting on the time they tried to kill Pence. And not long ago, we had rictus. It's a noun that means a fixed grimace or grin. I'm happy for the best actress, even though I didn't win. Let's never forget Gallimaufry, which Paula pronounced wrong until nobody, James Heider, corrected her. It's a noun that means confused jumble or medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think Paula's song is replicable. Replicable, replicable. Shake it, Miss Nancy, but I do, I do, I do, I do.
Wow. That was really special, Miss Nancy. Thank you for that.
Oh, it was my pleasure. You know, it's so good to just come on here with you guys and just cut loose. You know, you can't really do that when you're teaching online. You can't really cut loose, you know?
No, you really can't. It's frowned upon. But I do thank you for stopping by. And definitely call again sometime. I love hearing you sing the vocabulary song.
Thank you so much, Adam Felba. That's so nice of you.
And I love being spared the glockenspiel.
Now that cuts deeply to Paula. You know, she works at that glockenspiel.
I know. I do know that. But
I'm not going to tell
say
her
we gotta...
that you said that.
Oh, no, please don't. I value my relationship with Paula. Coming up, polar explorer Roald Amundsen said, adventure is just bad planning. We'll find out if Paula's up for an Arctic adventure. That's next on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Hey guys, it's Adam, and tonight is January 3rd, and I am picking Giannis Antetokounmpo to score less than 36 points and James Harden to score more than 16. Why? Because I like beards. Am I putting a lot of money on this? I am not, because I'm not really a gambler, but I am having a lot of fun with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, who I would lose to, you pick more or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, or in my case, not. So I don't bet a lot. With the basketball season here, you can now pick combo projections across football and basketball from the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include two or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce had a 10.5 combo of 3 points made, plus receptions. Do I get that? Kind of a little bit. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, that player is rebooted. So, it's like an insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. And then drop by and see how I did with the Greek Freak and Harden again on January 3rd. My hopes are not that high. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me down there my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
On this day in unremarkable history, J. Edgar Hoover said, "I'm watching you."
Hey, Paula Poundstone, you know what I've heard? I've heard that performance venues are closed nowadays.
Yeah, just this just in.
It's just striking me that that might make things difficult for a comedian such as yourself.
Well, I've tightened my belt. That's for sure.
Yeah.
No, I got to find something else, Adam.
Like what? What could you possibly find, Paula?
I had this great idea.
What's that?
On a bright, shiny day in Santa Monica, while I was walking my dog, I thought maybe I could be a polar explorer.
Well, I can see how Santa Monica might inspire that in you. Unfortunately, we have a legendary polar explorer with us on the phone who can help see if you're up for that kind of job. Yes, it's time for Career Corner, where we learn about the wide world of jobs. Would you like to be a fireman? How about a train engineer? Maybe you'd like to make a living as a spot welder. What can you do with your life? Career Corner has the answer this week. Let's explore a career mushing dog sleds to the North Pole. Here to help Paula discover if she could cut it in the stressful, high-stakes world of polar exploration is
Anne Bancroft. She dog-sled 1,000 miles and 56 days as part of a team of eight in the first confirmed dog-sled journey to the North Pole without resupply. She led a 67-day, 660-mile expedition to the South Pole on skis, earning the distinction of being the first woman in history to cross both polar ice caps to reach the North Pole and South Pole. Please welcome Anne Bancroft!
Yeah!
Welcome, Anne.
Oh, thanks for having me.
thanks so much for being with us and for sticking through technical problems to do it.
Well, I'm used to technical problems.
Yeah, you must just brush them out of the way like so many cookie crumbs. A person who's done all the things that you've done. And I'd like to put together a dog sled expedition to the North Pole. I want to become a North Pole influencer if I could. And I'd like to bring my dog, Mo. So where do I start? What are the steps?
Well, I think the first step is to figure out what kind of dog is Mo.
She is part Newfoundland and part Golden Retriever.
Oh, well, not bad for polar. A little furry.
She has six toes. Does that help?
Yeah, because, you know, if you lose one, you got more.
Yeah.
How likely is she to lose a toe out there?
Oh, very.
Oh, wow.
Really? Dogs lose toes all the time?
Well, not so much the dogs. It's the two-leggeds that have the problem.
So, speaking of the two-leggeds, what are the qualities and qualifications you look for when putting together a team for an expedition? I mean, how do you decide how many people you need?
Well, looking for what the qualities that you really want is somebody that can be by themselves a long time.
Because
if you can just imagine you have a face mask on, it's 70 below zero, you're in single file, and you're doing the hardest work of your life. So there's no talking. It's too cold. It's just hard to get heard. So you gotta that solitude thing. I'm not sure that's your bag.
Well, to be honest with you, the fact is, when I was on the road, the majority of my life was alone. Because alone in a hotel room. I mean, it's okay, sitting on an airplane, but I didn't generally talk to the people on the airplane. Every now and then I would engage in a conversation, but mostly, in fact, I was alone.
Well, there you go. You surprised me. So that's why we do interviews.
Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What else does she need besides being able to be alone? And by the way, I would assume that Paula talks only a little bit less when she's alone.
Well, I talk to myself too, so you've got to self-entertain. You have to be able to have that personality that puts one foot in front of the other for a long time and not see a lot of changes.
All right, so where do I start even in the organizing of the expedition?
Well, once you get your team, it starts to get easier from there.
Because you delegate?
You know that you're going to need 7,000 calories a day. And you know a lot of it has to be fat. So you plan your diet. It has to be simple and high calorie, high fat.
Did you say 7,000 calories a day?
Isn't that repulsive?
It's amazing. Like, isn't a normal adult supposed to take in something like 2,100 calories a day?
Yeah, I'm on a polar diet all the time, unfortunately, but
I feel like I have been most of my life as well.
Yeah. And it's the COVID thing.
Yeah.
But the thing that I learned after doing a lot of cold weather expeditions is that first week you come up, you're sort of fat and sassy, but your diet is still 7,000 every day or 6,000, whatever you decide. And you eat at night really fast. And then usually you get into your sleeping bag and lie down. And if you don't need all those calories, it starts to creep up You find yourself in a hot sweat, sitting up in your sleeping bag really quick to bring it back down.
Oh, like you're going to throw up, you mean?
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
This is just little
this
trick.
This is the life for me.
Yeah.
All right, so you
I don't know
plan,
why I brought that up.
You plan, well, brought that up. So, all right, so you get your food. You know, our engineer Land mentioned earlier that Mariah Carey has these really good cookies. What are the best kinds of foods to bring to get this 7,000 calories?
Well, on the North Pole trip, we decided to go really simple, and we had a fairly disgusting diet. It worked, but it was something I never wanted to repeat on any other expedition. So it was, we would have a pot of noodles at night with a lot of butter.
I love that.
And cheese. That part was really good. And then they dumped in a meat called pemmican. And it's about 70% animal fat or lard, a little bit of meat, and some berries.
Ew.
It was really gross.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds gross. Is that why you eat fast? Because it's just not the stuff you want to really tarry over?
Well, you don't want to procrastinate because it freezes up in your bowl.
Oh, wow. Now, is it because
everything
it's
freezes.
Cold that you're burning that many calories, or is it because of the extreme amount of exercise required to trudge through that stuff?
That's a great question. It's both. It's the hard work during the day. It's 8 to 14 hours on our feet, pushing sleds, and then you're just shivering all the time.
Oh, so the shivering is burning calories. That's interesting.
Oh, it's
so how about... I'm sorry. How about Butterfingers and Doritos? How's that as a polar diet?
Well, not very nutritious. So it would taste really good.
Yeah. Well, Butterfingers used to taste good. So I'm assuming then that you're trying to get calories, but also helpful foods.
We're not going to get scurvy, but we've got to get the right kind of calories in.
All right. Well, that's disappointing, but okay. And what else do you have to plan?
We have to plan precisely how much food. We can't take too much because we've got to carry it. Mm-hmm. And then we have to plan how much fuel is needed to cook that food or melt ice for our water. That's probably the most critical thing that we bring. There's no firewood, so you've got to calculate.
Wow.
All right, so you were a part of a team of 8 that dog sled 1,000 miles in the first confirmed dog sled journey. That's confirmed dog sled journey. There might have been some that nobody knew about to the North Pole without resupply. Are you carrying backpacks, or is all the equipment on a sled?
All the equipment is on the sled. The only thing, Paula, that you need to know that might dampen your spirit a little is we don't ride the sleds.
Oh. Oh, no.
We have to help push as well.
Uh-huh. And how many dogs is it?
10 dogs per sled.
And how many sleds?
We had 5 to start with, ended with 2.
Oh.
Oh, because you ate the food?
Yep.
What'd you do with the sleds?
We chopped them up and burned them.
What'd you do with the dogs?
For a little toxic heat. The dogs were just happy to have less weight to pull.
Oh,
there you go. Okay.
We don't eat the dogs.
Good to know. Thank you.
I didn't think that for a second.
I did.
All right.
Well, in the old days, they used to.
Oh, did they? Oh, boy, that'll ruin a Disney movie.
That will.
Uncool running.
I just said to my dog Sirius tonight, I was stepping out of my bedroom and he insisted on coming in the kitchen with me. And I said, you know, it's so lovely to have a companion. it's so Disney of you.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like I was doing anything in the kitchen that he wanted to be a part of. He just thought it was important to stand beside me while I did whatever it was.
Yeah, they're awesome.
All right. They are.
I agree.
So, is there? Do your dogs wear booties and stuff? What do you do? So, oh wait, let me back up a little bit. Where do you sleep?
We sleep 4 people per tent.
And how many dogs per tent?
The dogs sleep outside.
Do they?
They're very amazing. They curl up into a little ball. And even in a storm, the older dogs will just stay put for 3 days, not get up or pee or eat or anything. And the snow that lands on them is like a little igloo.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And they put their tail over their nose, and they lift, they sort of turn their paws upwards. So they're very smart about the cold.
Uh-huh. And all, nothing that, well, how much training goes into that? Were the dogs already trained and then you joined in, or were you part of the training of the dogs that went on your expeditions?
We all trained together. They're just like us. They have to want to go. They have to kind of make the team. So we had probably about a little over 100 dogs in our training camp. And then we whittled down to 50. Well, 49. One jumped ship.
Wow. Okay, so so what about you guys? What training do you do for the trip, the two-legged travelers?
Well, we skied and ran and worked dogs. And we lived in a northern Minnesota, just outside of a town. It was 40 below on average, and we lived in tents, and it was kind of, I don't know if it was the greatest way to train, but it made for a long year.
Yeah, sure.
How long did the training process go on?
Well, it went on for a couple of years, but the really intense part was 10 months.
A couple of years. And how do you know you're ready? Just because somebody in the group, like Tony with our book club, goes, fuck it, I'm not going to do this anymore unless we just go now?
No, the leaders just say this is when we're going.
Oh, okay. So there's no, like, benchmark that people have to have achieved in order to be ready?
No. I was just really lucky because, you know, it was originally an all-men's trip. And then they decided they were going to add 2 more people and make it 8. And one of the leaders said, you know, it's the 80s. Why don't we add a woman? It might help for fundraising.
Oh, for fundraising. You know, wow. Yeah.
And it's not the window it's not the way you like the window open, but you just take it.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Was it Mondale? Is that who the leader was?
I wish Mondale was the leader. He would have.
Oh yeah, he's from your home state,
more
right?
Equitable.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Mondale Ferraro? Am I right? Was that there?
That's right. You're. Spot
yeah.
On.
So he was the one that decided. Hey, a woman might be a fun idea.
Also a Minnesotan, I think.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, sounds like it. Adam?
Yes.
What did Apsley Cherry Garrod say?
I was just getting to that. Polar explorer Apsley Cherry Garrod said, polar exploration is at once the cleanest and most isolated way of having a bad time which has ever been devised. We'll discover more qualities of polar exploration when we come back. The Cat of the Week is Charlie Stickers from Fort Worth, Texas.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're Jesus, the best. You the
okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're back with polar explorer Anne Bancroft. Paula, you had a question.
I did. You know, when Mondale came to you and said, we want to bring a woman along, Anne, why you? Why not Ferraro?
Well, I think he did a little background check on me and turned out he knew my climbing partner on Denali in Alaska. And he asked him, what's she like when the chips are down? And he said, you know, she keeps her sense of humor. And I think that was my way in.
Oh,
fantastic.
So that I don't know if I would keep my sense of humor when the chips are down, but I feel that my record in the area of sense of humor is strong.
Yeah.
So that I got that going for me. Now, the other thing is, in what did you say it was? How cold was it again?
Well, when we started off, it's early March, and the sun is just not up at the part of that curve of the Earth. So it's about 70, 75 below. Well, that's as far as the numbers went on the thermometer.
Uh-huh. Oh. So would you bring a sweater?
Or a sweater vest. Or a sweater vest is okay.
What do you wear to protect yourself against 70 below temperatures?
A lot of layers. We had a combination of, you know, things like Gore-Tex and fleece and down with seal and caribou outfits. I have these great seal skin pants that I think would be really great in a bar.
That's a lot of layers. I picture you like the kid in A Christmas Story falling over backwards and just being stuck. Are they very thick layers?
You don't always wear them all the time. I guess you're working really hard, so you don't want to sweat, and that's the idea behind the layers.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't want to sweat because it'll freeze?
instantly. As soon as you stop, you're just a bag of ice.
Wow.
Oh, well, you that's terrible.
A few times, Anne, I've done, like, I happen to have been the first woman to perform at the White House Correspondents' Dinner many, many years ago it was. And I anxiously looked through the Washington Post the following day to see what they said about it. And I was not happy to see that they wasted they wasted ink saying what I was wearing.
Uh-huh.
They don't do that for guys. It was, you know, yeah. and by the way, I was wearing a lovely outfit. But they just don't do that for guys. So when they wrote about you being the only woman on this expedition, did they say, a shapely Gore-Tex ensemble?
No, I never got quite that review, but I will tell you that they came in at one point to get the dogs out. It was a routine halfway through the trip. And one of the guys was injured, but they didn't know who because it was very hard for us to communicate in those days. It was 35 years ago. And the correspondents that were on the plane when they landed came roaring over to me, convinced it was me that was coming out because I was physically the smallest. And the woman, and they came up to me, and I've got a smile from ear to ear. I'm having the time of my life. I mean, it wasn't that it wasn't hard, but I'm having a blast. And that sort of started to change the spin of what was printed. But there was a lot of hype around whether or not I'd make it.
Well, I think probably one of the reasons they came to you right away was that from a distance, they could see the high heels. And I don't think.
Yeah, you had to walk backwards in heels all the way to the North Pole, right?
All
yeah,
the way.
I don't think that was your best choice. Okay. So people are, there's an odd isolation. You're walking in a single file. It's you got masks on. It's too cold to stop and chit chat. So it's a very isolated. Are there people on any expedition you've been on or that you've heard about where they kind of crack from that?
Yeah. On a couple of my other expeditions, I had a couple of women that it just wasn't their thing. And they sort of had a mental breakdown.
Oh, my gosh. And what do you do about that?
You eat them. Obviously, right?
Obviously.
Back me up, Anne.
Oh, yeah. Dummy. You just sort of slap them up the face.
Really?
Yeah, snap out of it. There's no other option, is there? Because they can't go, talk to a counselor.
No, it's really hard. It's almost worse than a physical injury.
Wow.
It's hard on them too because there's so much shame involved. Of, it's easier if you break your leg or freeze your feet or something.
Yeah,
right. It's hard for a man to admit that he's mentally cracking.
Yeah,
yeah, or anybody I imagine in that setting. Because the other thing is, if they went on these trips, it wasn't their first time, was it?
Well, I think that's the thing that we really try and do is do enough training trips, long ones. That we ferret out those folks that it's just not their thing and they think it is.
Yeah.
Why is it your thing? What's fun?
Well,
what's fun
question.
About 70 below and 7,000 calories made from elk and all that stuff?
I'm a weird person. I started doing this. My first expedition was out in the backyard in a Minnesota winter when I was 10.
Wow.
And I can't say that I remember it being that fun, but it stuck
well,
with
what
it.
What was it then? What did you do?
I just love the solitude, and I hate being cold, but I love being out in that cold. If you do it right, it's just an extraordinary privilege. And
if you do it right, your phlegm freezes. All right. Have you, Anne, ever felt like giving up or had words of advice to give to someone during the trip who did feel like giving up?
Both. I always feel like giving up at some point on the trip, but usually a good night's sleep or, you know, your team member says something to you and cheers you up, or you open your journal and there's a picture of home in summertime or something like that. You recalibrate. Uh-huh. Cheering up another team member is a little harder, you know, sometimes. How to hit that right note to, you know, my jokes aren't very good and my singing's terrible, so it's hard to bring them around sometimes.
And I am really feeling my opportunity rising here.
I know, you're totally qualified.
I mean, do you want a comedian on your team?
Yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't you want somebody like Paula there? Because she could keep everybody sane, even if she loses her mind.
Yeah, well, it's a fine line, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Losing your mind and being funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's really important you've got to laugh, you've got to enjoy what you're doing, and you can't take yourself too seriously. It's serious stuff, but you got to just kind of go along. We laugh a lot, actually.
Oh, I would think.
I think so.
I mean, plus, I would think it's a setting where there's not a tremendous amount of dignity.
Yeah, when you're peeing in front of everybody else, there's no dignity.
Yeah, exactly. When your pee is freezing within your urethra, I would think that your guard has to be down a little bit. Now, I've done a little bit of backpacking, and I personally can spin out of control in the REI. Do you have a favorite tool or piece of clothing that you think is just brilliant, that is well worth the money that you pay for it?
You know, we usually select our gear, and it's a hodgepodge of this, that, and the other thing that sort of works. There's not any one sort of outfit that works for the polar regions. There's just so few people that go there. They don't really make that stuff. So we tend to adapt everything that we have. Our face masks, our tents, everything's got a little bit of our touch of design.
I'm actually tearing up right now, Anne, because this gives me a chance to say something that the 2-something years of doing this podcast, I've never been able to say. So you bring a gallimaufry of equipment and gear to your trip. It means hodgepodge, Anne. I think gators are so great. You know, I grew up in Massachusetts, and there's something, you know, when the snow goes, you know, above your boot line, that or catches that little section of leg that sometimes sticks out, it's such an awful feeling. And so the idea that you put this thing on that goes over the top of your boot and the bottom of your pants and just holds it snug. Come to think of it, I want to wear those every day, even in Santa Monica.
Well, I think you're right. Gators are good.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
You know what else is good now that you bring it up is all of our snow pants we make them bibs because there's nothing worse than leaning over and untucking.
Plumber's
crack in the Arctic is not good.
No, because it's likely to actually crack, right?
Oh, yeah.
as an OCD sufferer, I got to tell you, untucking like makes my teeth jangle together just thinking about it. That's a really good advice. Bibbed overalls. So you've been to the North Pole, the South Pole, and the Ganges River. Let me just begin with this. Are there different skills required? What did you do differently on the North Pole than you did on the South Pole? Is it basically the same place?
No, they're entirely different. The North Pole, the Arctic, is the Arctic Ocean. So it's a surface that changes every minute. It can open up while you're sleeping or walking or whatever. It's sort of an alive surface. And then on the South Pole, at the Southern Hemisphere, You've got 24 hours of sunlight because you travel in summer. Temperatures are a little better. And it's 2 miles of ice cap, but there's terra firma underneath.
Oh.
So the ground isn't literally shifting beneath your feet.
No bears. It's a different kind of shifting. You've got crevasses because you're on a giant glacier.
No, wait a minute. Back up. You just said no polar bears. I totally forgot to ask you what sort of wildlife you might encounter. So polar bears could come around?
In the Arctic.
Wow.
But did you run into any polar bears during your North Pole expedition?
Expedition?
It's hard to say.
We had polar bears. We had wolves, white wolves. There's Arctic fox, and there's seal.
Uh-huh. Well, I wouldn't want the seals to see the pants you were wearing.
The South Pole is mostly just penguins, though, right?
Yeah, and, you know, we travel for most of the time in the interior, and all the life is on the borders, you know, on the coast. So we don't see the penguins until the very end.
But then did you see penguins?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love penguins.
They're fabulous.
Was Morgan Freeman up there?
I didn't see Morgan.
Because he did the narration, you know, for the penguin movie.
He was in my head.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a perfect voice for doing that. Do you pack everything out? You don't leave stuff, right? It's not like Everest.
No, we bring everything out.
I love that.
let me just ask, getting along with dogs is super important for these kind of expeditions, right? I mean, dogs are important to the expedition. You want to talk a little bit about that?
It's critical. So I think that's a check in Paula's column. If you can like dogs, but if you don't relate to dogs, nothing's going to happen. You can't motivate a team of 10 dogs if they don't, you know, if they don't feel motivated by you, if you don't have a rapport. And I definitely, you know, I tried not to have a favorite, but I did. I had this outcast dog because I felt like an outcast sometimes. And so he was my best bud. And when you're frustrated and you want to have a little cry, you just bury your frostbitten cheeks in his fur and he never tells your secrets.
Oh, that is nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And they probably don't make you throw tennis balls for him all the time, right?
Never.
Oh, see, that's my dog. That's my dog, Mo's. One of her not so great characteristics is that she is tennis ball obsessed.
That's that golden.
Yeah. Oh, it's obnoxious. just my whole, you know, picking up that ball in her mouth and staring at me all the time. It doesn't matter how many times you've thrown it already. What about the dogs? What'd you feed the dogs?
Well, we fed them mostly seal.
Oh.
Boy. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Again, so awkward when you get seal visitors.
Yeah. Well, they stay away. It's not good for polar bear, though. It does kind of attract. So if you looked on our sled, you would see all these seals, complete seals, just stacked up frozen like firewood.
Oh, my gosh.
And you pull one out, and then you chop it up and toss it to the dog.
Wow. Well, and
all right.
I'm ready to go. So I can't thank you enough.
Well, here we go,
I think
Paula.
You're totally fit for it.
There you go.
Paula, now that you've gotten all that information, what have you learned about being a polar explorer, and could you do that job?
Okay, house band Ansel Norris, could I get a little background music? And I'll tell you what the Pouncedonator spit out. I could be an Arctic expedition team member. I think I'd bring a lot to it. Well, that was a yummy 3,000-calorie dinner. Anybody want seconds? I'll take some more. Hey, before you head to your tents and before your food comes back up, how about if you gather around and I'll tell you some of my little jokes? I don't need an introduction. I'll just come out from behind the sled. Hello, North Pole! Thanks for coming. It's good to be here. I was pushing a sled earlier today, about 4,392 steps back. I think I got it up to 0.01 miles per hour. One of the dogs felt so sorry for me. He regurgitated his frozen seal for me to eat, and it looked good. I heard there were going to be sleds on this trip, and I thought, fantastic. I was thinking, you know, the Olympics, right? So here I am, pushing a fucking sled, thinking, where the hell are the Jamaicans? It's a bobsled joke, sir. By the way, what do you do for a living? Oh, exhibitionist. Thank you. No, I've seen Kellyanne Conway dance. I don't need any more traumatic memories. Oh, expedition. My mistake. This isn't the only job I've ever had, you know. I used to work at the International House of Pancakes until Trump pulled us out of there. Do you ever wake up with your face frozen to your pillow? Boy, that sucks, right? I mean, do you come out of your tent with a whole fucking pillow stuck to your face, or do you pull it off and lose part of your cheek? That my pillow guy is a seditious bastard, huh? He's probably one of the few people on the earth that were better human beings when they were on crack. And those lame commercials? I developed the My Pillow for 2 years. Really? 2 years? Were you working 8-hour days? It's foamy shit in a cloth bag. What did you try to put in the bag? Pine cones? Gerbils? Shredded constitution? Well, I guess my time is up. If you liked the show, I'm going to be about 9,052 steps away in that direction tomorrow night. Thanks for coming. Count your toes and try to keep them. Good night. Ah, shit. My berries, lard, and unfamiliar meat is frozen.
All right. Well, Paula, I'm not sure that's going to take you as far as the North Pole, so your job search may have to continue, but Anne Bancroft is one of the world's preeminent polar explorers and an internationally recognized leader who is dedicated to inspiring women and girls around the world to unleash the power of their dreams. Thank you, Anne Bancroft, so much for coming on our show.
Thank you so much
Thanks,
for having
Anne,
me.
You were wonderful.
It was an honor.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, the Department of Correction. We're only human, and our listeners have caught us in several factual errors. We'll get out the red pencils and make those corrections when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Fun fact, legally, the Queen owns all the swans in England, but she hardly ever cleans up after them. And we're back, and Paula, it is that time. It is time for the Department of Corrections.
I just can't take it personally. That's the key.
And you know what? That's going to be the key for me, too. You and I are both tend to get a little, we get our shirts up a little bit. I don't know why we do this segment, because we both tend to get kind of mad when people correct us. But
yeah, I can sometimes. I do. I get my hackles up.
Yeah, your hackles. I can see that. Back when we recorded in person, I would see them standing on the back of your neck, those hackles.
Oh, my gosh. There were times we had to take a break just so I could send the hackles out onto Miranda Street.
just to cool off a little bit. Get outside, Hackles. Well, we always try to be absolutely accurate when we report facts on the show, but sometimes things slip through the cracks, and fortunately, because they're NPR listeners largely, nobody's from around the world are ready to correct us. Tony and Idaho, can you tell us what the Department of Corrections has uncovered?
I sure can, Adam Felber. So in episode number 135, we described white nose syndrome, an emergent disease of hibernating bats that has spread at an alarming rate in the U.S. and Canada as a virus. Now, Rebecca Shea, a PhD student at Michigan State, wrote and said, "Not to be that person, but white nose syndrome is a fungus, not a virus." It made me just a little sad as a mycologist listening this morning.
A mycologist?
Oh. I don't know what that is.
Tony?
I'm guessing a mycologist studies fungus, because just from context, but I do not know that for a fact.
That is correct. It is someone who works with fungi.
I remember this whole incident at the time. Because I kept saying, after we were stopped recording, I kept saying, you know, I'm pretty sure that white nose syndrome is a fungus. And you guys just wouldn't listen.
Right. Yeah, I was so sarcastic at you. Paula, I have to own this one because I was really sarcastic. I was like, thank you, mycologist.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yes. You sure know a lot about funguses. Why don't you go back to mycology school? I remember saying that.
Yeah, it was hurtful, and so I just gave it up. You know, I thought, what's more important here, our friendship or me being right about white nose syndrome? Which, by the way, Adam, I think earlier you referred to as white noise syndrome, and that's going to
come back to bite us.
We're
going
to
re-record that. Nobody will ever know that I said white noise syndrome.
No, you're just teeing us up for our next Department of Corrections episode.
Well, I think you just saved me a retake, Paula, so I've got that going for me.
It's like quicksand. You know, the more you struggle, the worse it gets. Here we try to clear up that
I know.
The white nose syndrome is not a virus, for heaven's sakes, and what kind of boob would think it was, but a fungus, of course. And in the very clearing up of that mistake, we make another mistake. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, Tony, thanks for that one. And, of course, thank you to Rebecca Shea. And I hope you get that PhD. Tony, let's get another one.
Sorry about that mistake, Rebecca.
We're very sorry.
Sorry, Dr. Shea. Okay, so in episode 131, Bonnie noted
She's not a doctor yet, Tony. I'm sorry to cut you off, but Rebecca's not a doctor yet, and you just called her doctor, and some doctor is going to write it and get on our ass for that.
Oh, my God. It's going to be quicksand again. We're just going to keep going down the going down the tube on this correcting. Okay.
It's a disastrous segment. Go ahead, Tony. What else?
In episode 131, Bonnie noted that Yale University's coat of arms featured an open book inscribed in Hebrew that roughly translates as light and truth, the school motto. She thought that was ironic, because until the 1960s, there was an unwritten law among Ivy League schools that Jewish enrollment would be less than 10%. Now, our friend Brian McCafferty wrote us saying, "Bonnie, Yale was a divinity school. Gotta know Hebrew to read the book in the original language."
Whoa.
Okay.
So this is going to sound silly, but the Bible was originally in Hebrew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because what did you think it was in?
Yeah, everybody was Jewish back then. Everybody you talk to back in the Holy Land was Jewish. No, it's not actually true at all. But
you know what? It must have been so much more fun.
What, having all those Jews around?
Yeah, when everybody was Jewish. Yeah. Before there were these...
There's a lot.
I could be screwing up history here, but before there were these breakaway factions. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I would have followed Brian if I had my choice. I would have followed Brian.
Oh, from Life of Brian or Brian McCafferty, who wrote us in, who wrote in about this?
No, Life of Brian.
Sorry, Mr. McCafferty. But here's my question, and I think this is a good question, or it might be a stupid question. But Tony, what are we actually correcting here? I don't think Bonnie said anything wrong. She just said it was ironic that there would be Hebrew on the coat of arms of a school that didn't allow that many Jews.
No, I think it's a correction, because Bonnie was saying that the Bible was written in the Jewish language, and Brian is saying that the Bible was written in the Jewish language. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think so. You're saying that the Bible is in the Jewish language, not the Jewy language.
No, no, no. Jewish and Jewish. I think that.
What's the difference?
I think that Bonnie thought that although it may have been written in Hebrew in the beginning, she thought that it was translated into English and then put in Hebrew on the coat of arms, right?
Okay, this is obviously going to spawn so many more corrections from our listeners, this whole discussion.
Oh, my God.
I can hear
the emails coming in about it right now.
Ding, ding.
No, no, because when a historian like myself speaks on something like this, it clears so much up.
Yeah, I think your distinction between Jewish and Jewish is going to hold a lot of water with our listeners.
Yeah, I do. Well, I do. I think that he thought that Bonnie thought that it was translated to English, and then they took the English and they put it in Hebrew on the coat of arms.
Sure.
No.
Right? No?
I feel a desperate need to move on from this one.
God, we're going to get so many letters.
It's a subtle distinction.
I love that you're siding with Brian McCafferty on this.
I think you're wrong about that. We're going to get some letters and some letters. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. Tony, please read us another one.
Okay, here we go. This is from Thomas Dean, who also had a note for Bonnie about the discussion of Moby Dick. Hey, Captain Crinkle, how could D.H. Lawrence and William Faulkner have influenced Herman Melville? Lawrence was 6 years old when Melville died in 1891, and Moby Dick was published in 1851, and Faulkner was born 6 years after Melville died. Maybe they were all caught in a black hole where time didn't exist?
Ooh. Ooh, this is dripping in sarcasm.
That turned snippy. Yeah.
Okay, in the part about D.H. Lawrence, this is just proof that you can teach an old dog new tricks. So even though D.H. Lawrence was only 6 years old, Melville heard something he said, maybe when he was, you know, playing with a hoop and a stick outside of his house or something, and then Melville used that in his own prose. That's what I think. And I really applaud the guy for, you know, being a lifelong learner.
Yeah, yeah. That kid with the hoop and the stick, he's got something. Hey, maybe I'll write a book about a whale.
Yeah, and by the way, we're not talking about D.H. Lawrence. We're talking about D.H. Lawrence.
Another important distinction. Absolutely right.
Yeah. Only because of COVID have I not been able to get together with the Association of Historians recently. But I'll tell you, the last time we did... me and Michael Beschloss got into like a knockdown dragout.
About that? About distinctions like that?
No, just about history, you know.
Oh, yeah, history in general.
We just had a disagreement about history. And, oh my gosh,
you once punched Walter Isaacson, right?
You know what? He had it coming. That's my feeling about, you know, any... He acts like he's such a man of letters. The guy's got a glass chin. All right, so
let's move on, Tony. Tony, what else you got?
So I posted on our Facebook page a note that actually is a picture that Paula sent me. And it was this beautiful origami version of the two of you, from a nobody named Arlo. So it was a watercolor painting with the title of the show. And Adam and Paula were done in folded paper figures. But beautiful. Dominic Sloniowski, maybe, wrote in with this correction. I'm sure he'll correct me on his name as well. Just an FYI, this isn't origami. Origami has strict rules, which this doesn't follow. For example, you cannot cut paper in origami.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's the art of folding.
I'm not sure that... No, I have it right in my hand now, and I believe it is folded, but it's my mistake. Because Arlo, I spelled it wrong. It's origami.
Oh.
So you know, we're both right. So thank you, Dominic. I didn't know there were strict rules to origami.
But you were talking about origami anyway.
Yeah, I was talking about origami. And apparently within the strict rules of origami, if you cut the paper... You can actually be put inside a paper-folded prison.
Right. Cunningly
very hard to get out
prison.
Of.
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to compliment you, Paula, and me, because we have not yelled at any of our listeners during this segment so far. And we usually get, you know, our hackles get up, but that hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's because I didn't say this yet. All right, Dominic, you fuckwad. Look it. It was just a picture, for God's sakes.
Now I'm sorry I brought that up. I probably should have kept you from calling a listener a fuckwad.
No, he's absolutely right. There's strict. I didn't know there were strict rules of origami. And now I just feel like a sham.
But anyway. I don't think Dominic was correcting you, Tony. If I'm not wrong, Dominic was correcting you.
Yeah.
No, I sent it to Tony, and I told her it was an origami by a guy named Arlo, and it was lovely, and it was fun, and it was very sweet of him. And so, Dominic, you are not a fuckwad. I take that all back. And thank you for the correction. And Arlo, thanks so much for the picture. It's cool.
Yeah, it is, and I feel like we probably, as long as we're going to continue doing departments of corrections, we should add. In the weeks following the Department of Corrections, the Department of Apologies. Tony, do you have any others?
We have one more, and this is for you, Mr. Felber. I'll take it. One of our house fans, Jay Clannon, lives in Berthoud, Colorado. I think that's how you say it, because Paula pronounced it incorrectly.
Yeah, it was for Paula.
Oh, I thought it was a cat of the week. My bad. Even though it says one of our house fans. But S.J. Weigel wrote in to say it's pronounced Berthoud. Colorado. I think you said Berthoud, maybe.
Yeah.
Tony, okay, it's pronounced Weigel. S.J. Weigel.
It's Weigel, and let me just say this. There are two places in Colorado. One is Berthoud, and one is Berthoud, and I was referring to Berthoud. Mr. Weigel, Mr. Weigel.
Yeah, yes, SJ, maybe you want to drop by Berthoud someday. Look around, maybe you'll learn something, huh?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, there's a statue to SJ Weigel in Berthoud. But of course,
you would never know about it, SJ, because you spend all your time in Berthoud.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't even know that that's... I don't know if that's S-J or S... it just depends.
Right.
Pronunciation can be very difficult,
Which is why maybe he should back the fuck off, right?
I think it's a woman.
Yeah, maybe she should back the fuck off then. Telling Paula Poundstone she don't know the difference between Berthoud and Berthoud?
There's two places. I mean, anybody think... There was, there's plenty of places to go around. You don't just have to have Berthoud. And by the way, who the hell wants to live in Berthoud? That's a ridiculous name.
No, Berthoud. I once accidentally booked a B&B in Berthoud because I thought it was Berthoud.
Oh, man, that's frustrating. That's not unlike the Four Seasons lawn place or whatever it was. What
exactly.
Was the name of that place?
Was it a Four Seasons Total Landscaping?
Yeah, not unlike that. Yeah.
It was not unlike that because I thought I was going to be right near the Yard Ornament Museum, and I wasn't because that's in Berthoud.
Yeah.
And I was in Berthoud.
Berthoud, it sounds like a skydiving accident.
It does. Or a skydiving accident sounds like Berthoud.
Yeah, I think I think their high school team name is the Berthoud Jumpers.
Yeah, the Jumpers. It's an amusing cartoon of a mascot hitting the ground at velocity.
Yeah, it's just I don't think they thought it out.
No.
So many of our town names just came from like towns. Well, not by the time you get to Colorado, I don't think. But, you know, so many towns in New England, of course, are just the name of towns from England. They weren't real creative when they came over.
No. But by the time they got out to Colorado, it was things like, you know, just what was happening when people found the place. Like Zeke's Tired Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, hey, look up there. Berthoud.
You know, that does remind that actually does remind me that like when Wait Don't Tell Me would do Salt Lake City, sometimes I would visit This Is the Place State Park. Have you been there, Paula?
No.
It is literally called This Is the Place State Park because as the Mormons fled across the country on their way to the Pacific, I guess Brigham Young got really tired, looked out of his carriage and said, "Oh my God, he's tired, he's sick." He's like, "Just stop. This is the place."
Oh, wow.
And that's how they found Salt Lake City. Yeah, and that's some fuel for our future Department of Corrections, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah, somebody's going to. I'm glad they didn't name a lot of children then, you know, because most kids would be named, "Oh, it's you." Or, "Well, would you look at that?"
"Look what came out of me."
Yeah, exactly. Thank God that's over. That would be a big girl's name. Thank God that's over.
That's
I'm not doing that again. That's a beautiful name.
Have you met my son, Maximum Dilation?
You touch me again, I'm cutting it off. That's it's a long name, but you know, but a beautiful one. A beautiful name,
especially in the original language, in the original Greek. Tony, Anita Hall, thank you so much for our Department of Corrections. Bonnie Burns, do you want to sing our Department of Corrections theme song to get us out of this segment?
Yeah, I can do that, but I have one correction.
Oh, you do?
Okay.
Well, I was thinking about the D.H. Lawrence, you know, Faulkner thing, and it turns out, okay, so I didn't read the thing like I was paying that much attention when I was looking up information on Herman Melville. And what it is, D.H. Lawrence and Faulkner were influenced by Melville. He wasn't influenced by them. And now I'll go into the, what do you want, the theme song, the ending thing? Yeah, Department of Corrections ending theme song. Da 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 da.
Whoa, that is powerful.
I think it's just lovely.
I think for anybody who's thinking of taking Professor Burns's course on Melville, I think there's every reason to reconsider.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paula, what's going on in the Poundstone product empire this week?
Oh, I'm so glad. You know, I know a lot of people are kicking themselves for not getting their cat a Poundstone pussy pillow for President's Day. But I have two pieces of very good news. Number one, the 4-inch by 5-inch catnip filled pillows with a cat joke on one side and an autograph to your cat on the other are still available. And two, cats refuse to read a calendar. Go to the store at paulapoundstone.com. You can also find my book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, in paperback and the audio version on CD, on which I am the reader alouder. That's paulapoundstone.com. Click around on fun stuff, including the store.
All right. And also, you can subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You get it at no charge. Every week, just hit that little button. And if there is a subject or topic that you'd like to know more about, tell us. We're always curious. And let us know at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Once again, that's nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam L. Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Anne Bancroft. She was amazing. And thanks to our amazing house band, Ansel Norris. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone. Yeah! Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hall. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by the inimitable Land Romo. Transcription services for the show are provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at transcribeme.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me? Man,
I'm
going
to book
such
a trip to Berthoud.
Oh, yeah. Berthoud. Berthoud. The rules for origami are so strict.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I don't tell anybody, but I have broken the rules before.
No. Not on that swan you gave me for my birthday.
Don't tell anybody. Don't tell
Paula,
anybody.
You didn't cut that swan with the scissors, did you?
I used a razor. I used an X-Acto knife.
You can't do that. That's against the rules of origami. Are you crazy?
We are gonna get in so
much. You could have the origami police on your ass, Paula.
And you know what they do? They fold you right in half.
I know. And now you put me at risk because you sent me an origami swan. I have the swan.
You know what? Throw the swan out the window.
Wait, there's a car in front of my house. I can't get anywhere near this one. Oh, shit. It's a folded paper car.
That's them. That's them.
Paula, you gotta get over here. Tell them you made it.
Okay, you know,
I don't want to die. I don't want to be folded.
Get some scissors. That's the only way to protect yourself. And a match. Get some scissors and a match.
Okay.
They're folded cops. They're paper folded cops.
Oh, that's right.
Do you have a shredder?
I do. I'm putting it in the doorway.
Get the shredder.
Here we go. The shredder's in the doorway. Ready? Come in. All right, problem solved. Thanks, Paula.
Yeah. Starburns
Audio, a podcast network.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.